Hey, Kayla.
Yeah, now?
Did you hear about the Mexican restaurant that only serves Indian food?
No.
Yeah, the chef's a total non-conformist.
Let me teach you how to eat. Let me teach you how to eat. How to marinate the meat. Let me teach you how to eat.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on that there iHeartRadio app. Hey, everybody, it's the Fork Report. I'm Neil Saavedra. Thanks for hanging out today. Slightly rainy Saturday, but it's a good time to talk about warm, tasty food. So let's get into Technique of the Week with my buddy Simon Majumdar, of course. He is author, Food Network judge, in-demand speaker, and cooking demonstrator. Of course, host of the fantastic Eat My Globe podcast. Heard everywhere you hear podcasts, including iHeartRadio. So check it out if you have not. Simon, good to see you, my friend.
So, Neil, where do you find Indian cookbooks in the library?
Where?
In the nonfiction section.
Da-da-ba-ba-da-da. I knew you'd have something. I knew it.
You've got to have something.
Always good to see you, my friend. I wanted you here for a couple reasons. We're going to get into weight loss with a dear friend of yours, Dr. Terry Simpson, who is a doctor who cooks, who knows food, who understands the medicinal purposes, the real purpose of food and how it works in our body. We'll get into that in the 3 o'clock hour. I encourage anybody like me who has struggled in that category to stick around. Right now, I wanted to hear your recipe for naan. It is such a great dish and accompaniment to a dish that I thought looking through your website last night, it would be a great place to start.
Well, yeah, I love making all kinds of Indian breads. And, you know, India is known for using a lot of breads, whether it's chapati or roti or, you know, paratha. But my favorite is naan. First of all, we need to get it right for everyone. You say naan, not naan bread. Naan means bread. So you don't say naan bread.
Otherwise, like chai tea? Bread. Like chai tea?
Well, like chai tea. Exactly like chai tea. And trust me, sometimes when I'm trying to describe it to people, I find myself saying it and kind of hitting myself around the face. So just say naan. Naan is different from some of the others in that it's a risen dough. So you're going to add a little yeast in there, and then you're going to roll it out. So for me, like all yeast risen doughs, don't overwork it. So the key is to get it kind of a little blitzed up, you know, mix those doughs together, let it rest. And the key then is how to cook it. So once it's risen, it's going to be like any other dough. You let it rise. You can knock it down again, let it rise again, form a little ball. You roll it out. Now, the classic shape for a naan is almost like a little teardrop. Well, not a little. It could be a big teardrop. So it looks like a teardrop. Use that. Use a small rolling pin, a little bit of flour on it. Let it rise again. And then dry frying it.
This explain, is the normally explain that in. What is that, dry frying?
So what I mean in dry frying is putting it on a dry pan. Like, so in India, if you don't have a tandoor oven, which is where you'll see it in a lot of restaurants, they'll slap it on the inside of that tandoor oven. It'll puff up, and you've seen those big naans that come to the table. And actually, there's some that they make that are kind of naan as big as a table, and you just end up breaking it up and eating with your hands. But what I do is I have what's called a tava. It's almost like the Mexican flat pan that you cook a tortilla on. My mind is comal, is it?
A comal. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sometimes so has a handle, sometimes has two. It's round and it's cast iron.
Uh-huh. So you could use that, will work perfectly. They're just kind of a cast iron skillet, flat. And what you do is a tiny bit of butter on there or a tiny bit of oil, not much on the pan, very little, using a brush. You put your naan on there, and you just wait until bubbles begin to appear on the top side of the naan.
Okay.
And that's when you know how to turn it over. And the key that you're looking for naan is that it should separate a little in the middle. Because what you want to do, Indian food to me is all about your hands. It's all about breaking the rice off, having the sauce, having the naan, or whatever bread, and scooping it up. So what I love to do as well is to make that naan, break it off, and then scoop up the sauce and everything inside. It's just one of the most delicious things. You get the naan, you get the raita, the yogurt, you get your rice together.
Reminds me of, you know, I have the ability to see you right now via Zoom, but your hand gestures, it reminds me of the Ethiopian style where it just all comes together and you're looking for that perfect bite each time you're eating.
Well, that's exactly the thing. You know, again, similar areas where you're using your hand to get food from plate to mouth. And a lot of this goes back to the history of, you know, forks are a relatively recent invention. And by relative, I mean 400 or 500 years old. You know, forks, when they usually people had a knife and they had their hands. And that's what they used in medieval times. And in fact, when forks were first came into Europe, they were declared the work of the devil by the Italians, who said they were anti-God because God had given you two hands to eat your food with.
You know, I love you, Simon. And it's always a treat when you're on. But if you keep talking crap about forks, I'm going to smack your face.
Well, they are the devil's work.
Yeah, it is funny. When you go back, and I encourage people to read, it is funny as to, I mean, we talk about things nowadays, even that the church gets involved in, or what people think is evil or dark. But when you go back, talk about the Elvis Presley of utensils. The fork was, you know, it's like you couldn't show it from waist down. It just was always demonized.
They actually said there was a princess from Byzantium came in to marry someone in Medici. And she used golden forks at her wedding in Italy. And the clerics all wrote about this. And she died shortly after of plague. And they said it was her own fault for insulting God by using a fork. So the reason I say that is, going back to your original question about naan, is that you, when you break it off, you have to create a scoop, a kind of a shovel, as it were, for your naan, for your sauce and your curries and your whatever you're eating. And then you need it to transport. But what you want is you want that outside to have a little crunch on the outside where it's fried. And then the inside needs to be soft and pillowy. Mm. And you can imagine, you know what a great naan tastes like. And you have that with the curry and the spice of that and a little bit of cooling from raita, the yogurt dish. There is something on that that is just truly, truly special. I have got a great recipe on my website. You go make it. But what you can also do then is stuff the inside. So there's kulcha naan that has coconut, dried fruits. There's garlic naan that I have that has cilantro and garlic. I do roasted garlic because I don't want raw garlic. So a little roasted garlic, roll that on the inside. Then before you fry it, it all puffs up and the inside is stuffed with that beautiful garlic. Or you know what? Just douse the outside with melted ghee before you use it and you serve it at the table.
Of course.
There are a few things better.
Yeah. Ghee is an Indian clarified butter. You can find it in your grocer now. Thank God you can find a lot of these things. A couple things. My guest right now is Simon Majumdar, author and, of course, food historian as well, host of Eat My Globe podcast. You can find wherever you listen to podcasts. Simon, you said a couple of things. One, roasted garlic. Explain how to roast garlic. It's a simple thing, but it transforms garlic.
Well, there are different ways that you can cook garlic to be used outside of just chopping it up and putting it in milk. First of all, the more you chop garlic, the more surface area it has, the stronger it's going to be because it releases more oil. So that's why you mince some. But what you want for roasted garlic, for me anyway, I just get the whole garlic. I will actually just take the top off. So some of the garlic is exposed. I'll drizzle olive oil, salt. You can put some spice on there, but you don't need to. Pepper, just wrap it up in silver foil. Cook it in the oven, you know, until it basically use your hands. Once it starts to feel a little soft in there, you know that it's ready. Take it out and just squeeze that into a bowl, all of that pulp. Now, here's the thing. You could just put that on some toast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
olive
it's fantastic.
Oil, a bit of salt. Happy, happy, happy. But if you keep that in a jar and put a little bit of olive oil on top so it doesn't go off, take a spoonful of that and add it to all of your dishes. It's not going to give you a strong garlic taste. What it gives you is this beautiful sweet taste. The other way of cooking it, get lots and lots of garlic cloves, put them in a pan, cover them in olive oil, and gently poach it on your lowest heat for about 2 hours. Confit.
Yeah, confit.
Cooking
yeah.
It in fat.
And that is just magnificent. Simon, we're up against the clock. We'll come back. My guest, Simon Majumdar, author, in-demand speaker, cooking demonstrator, of course, host of one of my favorite all-time podcasts dealing with food, Eat My Globe. It really is a walk through history. We'll come back. I have a couple of questions for you about the differences between naan and other Indian breads. And then we'll get into some spices, maybe condiments and things like that that people can do at home. We'll make sure you have links to all these things as well. So go nowhere. It is the Fork Report. Happy Saturday. We'll come back with more in just a moment. Let's get some news now with Amy King in the KFI newsroom. AM 640 Live everywhere on that there iHeartRadio app. Hey, everybody, it's the Fork Report, all things food, beverage, and beyond. My guest right now is Simon Majumdar, my good buddy. He's also an author, Food Network judge, very in-demand speaker and cooking demonstrator, and, of course, host of the fantastic Eat My Globe podcast, where you can listen to, I believe it's already in its seventh season, yes? Hold on, sorry about
that. Is it before Christmas?
Okay.
I'm beginning to write season eight now.
Wow. It's ridiculous. I can remember, you know, you starting this, and I think it's a brilliant combination. If you haven't had a chance to listen to Simon, the enthusiasm and passion, great. You can get that in a lot of people. But man, the history and in-depth about cooking and the history of ingredients and how things are put together, how things got their names, all of these things. Check it out when you get a chance. Right now, we're stealing Simon's brain and picking every bit of it as we talk technique of the week. We started out with naan. We'll get into some spice mixes as well. Simon, first, answer the differences between some of the breads, the difference between, naan and roti, for example.
Well, primary one is leavened, one is unleavened.
Okay.
And so roti you can often see called chapati as well. The unleavened one is something you produce very quickly. You know, it could be produced for breakfast. You can eat a lot of it. It's a flatbread.
And
it can be made very quickly.
Similar to a tortilla. It's similar to a tortilla.
Yeah. It's a quickly produced vehicle from plate to mouth. But delicious. And there are styles of roti and paratha. There are dozens of different breads in India, and a lot of them are regional. So they'll be using wheat, they'll be using rice flour in some places, they'll be using lentil flour in other places. Things like a dosa is considered a type of bread, and that's rice flour and lentil flour mixed together. Some of it can be fermented. But all of these things are used to kind of as a vehicle. My favorite outside of naan is I love making paratha or paratha, and that's basically an unleavened bread, but it has layers, and there are lots of different techniques, and I actually have a video on YouTube. So basically you will roll the dough flat, and then what I do is I roll that up into almost like a cigar shape, and then I turn that cigar in on itself so it forms like, it looks like a Catherine wheel or a spinning top, and then you roll that out again, and what it does is it has all these layers. What it's going to do is similar to naan, it's then going to have little pockets in it that are good for mopping up sauce, just in the way that you might think about a pasta having holes in it in various areas because it captures the sauce, you know, marinara, whatever sauce you're making. The same way that your breads in India will have ways of capturing sauce. And so the parathas, I've got a great video, or rotis that you make, and you'll see them in other cuisines as well, because Indians, as they traveled around the world, particularly after the end of slavery, Indians went all over the world to kind of take jobs, and they took their dishes with them. So you'll see rotis in Malaysia, you'll see it in the Caribbean. You'll think about Trinidadian rotis brought there by Indians. So you'll see them all over the world now in different cuisines. And making these breads is super simple. Roti is the simplest thing. It's just like oil, salt, water, flour. I mean, it's kind of nothing else. But you can also use rice flour if you're gluten-free. So that I always try and show when I do recipes that people can make them with rice flour, or other chickpea flour is another great one that you can make them with. So people shouldn't worry about breads from Indian food, because you can make them with other flours too.
Indian food is actually very inviting to a lot of different people because of how it's prepared, the ingredients in it. When we come back, my guest Simon Majumdar is with me. And don't forget to check out SimonMajumdar.com. SimonMajumdar.com. We'll link to recipes as well. And when you're there, sign up for his newsletter. Make that a point to sign up for his newsletter there at SimonMajumdar.com. We come back, Simon. I want to talk to you about spice mixes, spice blends that people should have in. And then we'll get into some condiments as well. Stick around as we're extending our technique of the week, getting into the new year with some new techniques, new ideas, and kind of broadening our horizons with food types, bread types, and all of the above. So go nowhere. Don't forget, coming up, Dr. Terry Simpson. We're going to talk about weight loss, but for real. I'm going to ask tough questions. I'm going to ask the real stuff, talk about crappy fad diets, which I hate, all those struggles that we all deal with. That's coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Go nowhere. Let's get the latest news now with Amy King in the KFI newsroom. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on that there iHeartRadio app. Hey, everybody. It is the Fork Report. I'm Neil Saavedra. Thanks for hanging out. This is a place to come at the end of the week for 3 hours and celebrate food, kind of shake off the heaviness of the week. This is a sanctuary from everything heavy and talk about stuff that we love, like good food and good conversation. We're going to get into a couple of news stories coming up with Simon Majumdar, my guest right now, but I wanted to extend the technique of the week a little bit because I love listening to Simon talk about not only his passion, but techniques and things like that for cooking. Of course, if you're not familiar with Simon Majumdar, where the hell have you been? Author, Food Network judge, in-demand speaker and cooking demonstrator, of course, host of the fantastic Eat My Globe podcast that I highly recommend. You can hear on our very own iHeart Radio app. Check out his website, SimonMajumdar.com. It's not like there's a whole bunch of Simon Majumdars out there, so SimonMajumdar.com. And also, don't forget, stick around for Mr. Mo Kelly at 6, and then Unsolved with Steve Gregory at 8. Okay, Simon, so I wanted to pick your brain a couple more technique things before we get into news stories I'd love to hear your thoughts on. Blends. I think there's some blends that we have, you know, a blend of spices that we think of a lot, especially coming out of, you know, fall and everything like that was pumpkin pie spice is everywhere, right? And it's really a combination of about 4 or 5 different spices, your nutmeg, your cinnamon, these types of things. What are some blends that you do, whether it's a rub or whether it's a garam masala or whatever?
Well, garam masala, I think, is a perfect one. First of all, I'm not a big fan of rubs on meat. I think God's done all the work. Salt and pepper,
not even,
you don't need to go any further.
Not even in your teens?
No.
Never mind. Keep it moving.
Let's keep it moving. Let's not dwell on that one. Which is what my mother said.
Talking. So, spices.
And so what I think is that great kind of, if you put too much rub on like meats and stuff, then you're doing them a disservice. Salt and pepper, a little bit of oil, that's all you need. But I do think certain blends like garam masala basically means hot mix in Indian. It has lots and lots of different flavors. Every family does their own one. Traditionally, garam masala gets added towards the end of a meal, not as part of the spice mix at the beginning.
Really?
Kind of echoing the flavors. And people often ask me the question, the difference between, say, curry powders and masalas. Masala means spice mix. What happened was curry powders, if you go to India and you cook a dish, there are specific masalas for every dish, whether it's tandoori, whether it's fish, whether it's a potato dish, there'll be specific ones that you use for it. But there's a different one for every dish. Now, if you come back to England, as a lot of the British people did during the Raj, they couldn't have all those spices. So what they did is they created kind of ersatz curry powders that tried to replicate a little bit of what those flavors were.
Sure.
And that's why you have curry powder. They could buy it, and the flavors and smells kind of replicated what they had in India without the exactness of it. And that's really what you get. But for me, I think there are certain dishes. If you have... harissa will be a spice and blend mix, which I love. But you mustn't overdo
excellent heat, and flavor in that particular mix?
Heat, sweet, salty, sour, all of those flavors going in. You'll get one, like there's a French curry powder called Vadouvin, which is very subtle, very light. You can put that into a cream sauce. You could cook it because there was a lot of India, there are a lot of French people in India in the colonist times. So you can get a lot of that flavor. There are lots of these spices, the za'atar. You get all of these mixes that you can mix with oils that you can use as dips. For me, they're all fantastic. But what I would try and say is there are some people who make really, really good ones. I can mention Sheffield Spices in Las Vegas, who are terrific and make really good ones. And they're kind enough to send me some. But if you're really into them, make them yourself, and you can balance those flavors. You can balance the hot, sweet, savory, sour. But if not, go to a really good maker who makes these spices that you can try at home. You know, people do spices for all kinds of things now. Jamaican curry powder for making curry goat. I will tend to buy one from a really good maker for that because I don't have all of those ingredients at home. And curry goat to me is a wonderful thing, but you need the spice mix to be right. So go to find a really good spice maker. You're not necessarily going to find the best ones at your supermarket. If you're really into your cooking, it's worth going online and doing that.
So do you have any on your website or a spice mix that is a go-to that you mix yourself at home more than purchase?
I do. So I have garam masala on my website. I have lots of other spice mixes. I also have a lot of blends so that you can make wet ones. So there's one that I will really recommend. It's on the website. It's called Balachuang. It's a Burmese mixture of dried shrimp, fried garlic, fried shallots, tamarind, soy sauce. I mean, it's glorious. It's crunchy. And chili pepper.
Is that something that you could put in the fridge and keep for a bit? Or is that made fresh for the dish?
No, you would keep it in the way that you would keep a jar of this also popular now, like chili oil.
Sure.
You know, the chili crisp that you've got at the moment. Lao Gan Ma, it's called. And there's lots of different versions of it. I'm just in front of me here. I've got about 10 different types that I've got that we have with different things. But so this thing is called Balachuang. Go and make it, and it's, like I said, dried shrimp, shallots, garlic, red peppers, soy, tamarind. It's wet, and you use it as a side dish to something, and the flavors that it brings. Serve it with a pork curry, serve it with fish, serve it with everything. It is so addictive. I mean, I could literally bathe in it on a Sunday. It's so good.
I didn't need that visual, but I appreciate the thought. I mean, But now it's going to have to, it's like a eye worm instead of an earworm. All right, stick around. We come back. There's a couple of news stories. I want your insight, the history, the importance of things like standard of identity when it comes to a product like champagne, for instance. You know, whether it has to come from the region. Strangely enough, it doesn't. There is a California champagne. We'll get into that. But stick around. We've got Simon Majumdar hanging out with us today. Of course, he is Food Network judge, in-demand speaker and cooking demonstrator, the host of the wonderful Eat My Globe podcast, heard on our very own iHeart Radio or anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Stick around. We're going to pick his brain some more. It is the Fork Report. Happy Saturday. Let's get some news now from Amy King in the KFI Newsroom. Live everywhere on that there iHeartRadio app. Hey, everybody, it's the Fork Report, all things food, beverage, and beyond. 3 hours to celebrate food, the people that make it, the culture behind it. And one of my favorite people to do that with is Simon Majumdar, a good friend and also a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he is a walking freaking encyclopedia when it comes to food. He is a frequent and beloved speaker. Whether you have a corporation or something like that, demonstrator at events to how to cook and showing you techniques. I keep threatening when things are mellowed out that we're going to do some sort of demo with him or a pop-up somewhere because I've had the opportunity to do that with him and eat his food, and it's pretty fantastic. So his current venture that he's working on is a labor of love. You've got to check it out. It is called Eat My Globe. The podcast can be heard on our very own iHeartRadio app, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts. SimonMajumdar.com is the website. We've been talking techniques with him. I wanted to get into some news stories because I love his insight as it ties into history. Really interesting story. The FDA revokes standard of identity for French dressing. Basically, a standard of identity is something that defines what the food it needs in it or what it should be to be called something. In this case, happens to be French dressing. Bizarre story when you think about it's taken the government 22 years to address a 1998 interest of saying, hey, we need to change this because it's talking about oil, it's talking about spices, it's talking about the things that are in it, something for acidity. But when it says that the minimum of amount of vegetable oil needs to be 35% by weight, that causes problems for people that want to do a low-fat version and things like that. In addition to that, Gruyere cheese can still be called, a judge rules, can still be called Gruyere, even if it's not from Switzerland. So, Simon, I wanted your thoughts on these. How important is it to control the heritage of some of these things or the contents therein?
Well, I think we've got two different aspects of it here. And one I can understand, which is the French dressing, because really French dressing is an American invention. You can do what you like with it. The law, as long as it makes sense within a certain context that it contains certain things, the variety within that, I think it's fine. And you're OK to alter those so that it's suitable for people of different needs, because you're representing not a particular place. You're representing a style. And I think that's fine. Yeah, I'm not going to worry too much about that. Once you start getting into things that have real representation in an area, primarily in Europe, but that can also be here in the US if you had West Virginia ham or something like that, and you start messing around with that, then I get much more angry about it. Because these, you're talking about areas where things have been going on for centuries, developing techniques. There are stratas of doing it. There are techniques, there are guilds that have been making these to make them the best that they possibly can. Parmesan is a perfect example. You mentioned champagne earlier. And although there are one or two Californian things that kind of slotted through and got a license just after the First World War when they started bringing in these PDOs, 99.999% of sparkling wines that are called champagne have to be made in champagne. Doesn't mean that the other sparkling wines in the rest of the world aren't fantastic, but they're not champagne. So a lot of this, I think, is really important to the Europeans. A lot of it happened because people from Europe came to the United States and were making food in the style of what they made before. Gruyere is a perfect example. Lager was another example. But they're not from that region. And I think if you call them in the style of, then that's one thing. Calling them the name of is something very different. The other side, I think, is sometimes these laws in Europe are still relatively new, 30, 40 years old. These political kind of designation or appellation control is relatively new. And a perfect example is cheddar. I love cheddar, but to me, cheddar has to come from the Cheddar Gorge in the southwest of England, the cheddar area. But because the process of making cheddar is also known as cheddaring, you can cheddar anywhere in the world and still call what you make a cheddar. But to me, a true cheddar has to come from the southwest, from the Cheddar Gorge in England. So now they're trying to create a West Country or a Southwest Country cheddar in England as a political designation or a geographical designation for the food. And I think it's really important because we need to be aware of where food comes from, why it was created. A lot of these were created because of the region. Stilton has to come from that part in the Midlands of England where there was pig farming and then there was fungus and there was all kinds of things in the air that created Stilton. You can make blue cheese anywhere else in the world, but you can't call it Stilton. And to me, I think America's a young country and has yet to realize that there are certain things that you can call, you need to call across the area. Yeah, we're beginning to see it now, Maryland crab cakes. You know, you can make Maryland crab cakes anywhere in the country and people can call them Maryland crab cakes. They're not. They're not made with the same water. They're not made with the same crabs. They're not made with the same with the, if you have a Philly cheesesteak, you can't have a Philly cheesesteak in LA. What you can have is a representation of a Philly cheesesteak, but you're not having the water in the bread. That's what makes Philly cheesesteak. You're not having the same beef. You're not having even just the kind of history of why they were made there. So I think America will hopefully begin to realize this as, you know, we're a very young country, 200 years old, nothing compared to how long they've been making some of these ingredients in Europe.
Oh, as you're talking about Gruyere alone goes back to the standards in that region to the 12th century. I mean, this is the laws that what you're talking about may be youthful, but the process is not. And I couldn't agree with you more, Simon, the importance of separating that. If you, in the style of, or, regional, an American region's version of, whatever it is. But I think tracing things back is imperative to the roots, the flavor choices, the textures, everything that goes into it. I think if we start erasing that, we're erasing history.
We are absolutely erasing history, which is a very dangerous thing to do. And it can work. We now see Greek style yogurt. You know, sure. We don't see Greek yogurt, although we see Greek style yogurt. Doesn't mean that it's not fantastic. It doesn't mean that it's not made with care. Doesn't mean that it can't be used in all the ways that the other one can. But it ain't Greek yogurt.
Yeah.
It's Greek style. Now, that's fine. But what we need to do is realize that there is a history that you're tapping into, going all the way back 800, 1,000, even further, going back to some of the cheesemakers that you've got, going all the way back. And if you start cutting that because someone in Boise wants to make something similar, and you start using laws to do that, then I think that's dangerous. It's not dangerous in the US yet because we're still relatively young, but it will be. And at some point, someone here who is making amazing food in biscuits, whoever, whatever that ingredient may be, they're going to go, oh, I wish we hadn't done that, as someone from another country is making them.
Unfortunately, no one's really clamoring to make American cheese anywhere else. But hey, who knows in 1,000 years? I can't agree more. And I think it has to do with the youthful ignorance of a very young country that has been the benefactor or the beneficiary, rather, of a lot of culture. And I think that those things, as we're still finding our voice in a lot of the culinary culture ourselves, that those things aren't as important mentally to us, but will be, hundreds of years probably down the line. Stick around, Simon Majumdar, my guest. He's going to join us again, introduce us to a very interesting combination of a human being, doctor and cook. Dr. Terry Simon is going to join us, so go nowhere. It is Simpson, rather. It is The Fork Report. I'm Neil Saavedra, KFI Los Angeles.